Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Metaverse Really? I got a PlayStation invite. Oh, well. I'll join later.
Yes. Or you can do both. This could be really hot, really woolly.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not going to edit it. I'm going to just leave that in, leave that little mix-up there. Welcome to the Metaverse Podcast. This is our fifth episode of the Spring 15 season. I'm J-Ro. You just heard his voice earlier. Skyline is here with me.
Hello, everyone.
On today's podcast, we're going to be doing our usual news. We have some impressions on High School DxD Born Episode 5, Dungeon Episode 5, Nisei Koi Episode 4, and Hibiki Euphonium, or Sound Euphonium, Episode 4. And then we are going to be talking about anime movies being adapted by Hollywood, and what's worked, what hasn't, and what are our thoughts on movies that are in talks or possibly in production of becoming a full-featured Hollywood film at some point. Let's go ahead and get started with the news. Let's actually start off with that movie discussion, which kind of sets the stage for our discussion later on, which is that James Wan, who is known as the director recently of Furious 7, has been in talks to direct the Robotech live-action film, and it's appearing right now that the directorial role has been offered to him. So Robotech seems to be getting a step closer to being greenlit for production.
It's been close to being greenlit for production for a number of times. I mean, at one point it was under Tobey Maguire's production house, and it had both him to star in it, and it also had Leonardo DiCaprio tapped for it as well, but that has since kind of vaporized, or under the surface, or something like that has happened. Harmony Gold is a really hard rights holder to work with, mainly because they still kind of have some tie-ups to the original Tonkinetsu properties that they derived Robotech from. For those that don't know, Robotech is actually a welding together of three somewhat connected 26-episode series. And they did an overarching meta story that actually, in retrospect, when you get right down to it, was kind of cool how Carl McHeck saw the whole of those three series and was able to put one standardized mythology over all of them that was somewhat suggested by the Macross, the first part of it. But it's been a wildly weird property to see a lot of progress go on. I mean, it's had comic book adaptations in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Its most successful licensing that it's ever tabletop RPGs. I had a copy of the Robotech role-playing game in 1987. So, and that was kind of interesting and weird. So it's a weird property. It doesn't surprise me that it's gone through this sort of development purgatory for as long as it has.
Yeah, and robots, of course, I think people could see why they would like that to be adapted. I mean, we've seen the Transformers movies sell, not be very good, but sell. and then also Pacific Rim, which people did like, and Guillermo del Toro, you know, you kind of see his love letter to anime there. I don't want to get too into it because we're going to be discussing that later, so let's move on to some other news. Fosh and I were talking Shonen last week, and we even mentioned about the upcoming Dragon Ball Z movie. Well, there's going to be a Dragon Ball anime in the summer 2015 anime season called Dragon Ball Super. And this is set after the Majin Buu saga in Dragon Ball Z, which was the end of Dragon Ball Z. And of course, they're teasing that there's going to be enemies stronger than, you know, Buu and all that stuff. Of course, because that's kind of what Dragon Ball Z in many shonen shows are based off of, is the fact that as they progress through the series and defeat other enemies, stronger enemies are going to come out of the woodwork. So it's going to be really unique, because I grew up with, you know, as many anime fans I'm sure did, grew up, you know, watching Dragon Ball Z on Toonami or something like that. It was kind of our gateway into anime, and, you know, now that we're, you know, I'm 10 plus years an anime fan, to actually watch a Dragon Ball series as it's airing is going to be pretty neat.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm happy for fans of the franchise. I've never been a fan of it myself. So I just kind of have to ask myself that if the stuff I grew up on, and actually this is not a difficult thing to think about because a couple of years ago, they did the update for Space Battleship Yamato, and I grew up as a child with the localization called Star Blazer. So it was absolutely mm-hmm. great to see that story finish. But, you know, also as I grew up, I started liking things like Ranma One Half and some of the earlier Rumiko Takahashi things. So if they picked up Ranma One Half again, I'd probably watch that too, just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah, and I think that's mainly what it is, because I saw the first Dragon Ball movie, the most recent one, Battle of the Gods, and quite frankly, it's not very good. Like, we've gotten spoiled by having more quality storytelling in shonen manga, like with what I've seen with Naruto and One Piece, that when you compare Dragon Ball Z to those series, like Naruto and One Piece kind of, you know, beat up on it, pun intended, I guess,
yeah.
because the storytelling is just much better and much more evolved there than what Dragon Ball Z ultimately is.
From what I understand, Dragon Ball Z has its roots in Chinese literature. It's a journey to the West with Monkey and all those other characters taking a trip over to the sacred mountain to learn Buddhist stuff. So there has to be something else that happens in Japanese, early Japanese culture, later Japanese, kind of that crossover stuff to where they can probably, you know, lift from and actually start telling new stories. But it's a long franchise. How do you mm-hmm. honor where yeah. it came from and at the same time change it just enough for modern audiences to be able to get the gist of it?
Yeah, that's a very difficult line to toe for them, I'm sure. And I think the safer bet is to just stick with what they've done for the many years. And, you know, it kind of helps that Dragon Ball Kai came out and summarized, you know, kind of took out the fillery content of the series and gave something that was a little bit more watchable for audiences today. So I'm interested. I'm definitely interested in watching this. It should be fun in many ways. Our next story, Saikano, How to Raise a Boring Girlfriend. It's getting an anime sequel. We do not know when. We don't know exactly what type of series it'll be, but Saikano, more anime.
Yes. That's something I'm actually quite happy with, because the show ended just when it needed to end, just when it needed to generate a lot of buzz about it, because all the girls were getting their stories and all of them were building up and sounding really interesting and really cool. And the way throughout the entire series, how they kind of gave even time to each one of the girls and at the same time mixed it up and evolved their characters as it went along was a good mix. And like I said, it stopped in a good place that could be picked up. They've got a goal set in mind, other than just, you know, a girl getting a guy. They're building their ultimate game, and that has yet to be debuted. They have yet to take it to Comic-Con or Comiquette or whatever they call it, particular anime. So mm-hmm. that's something that they've got to go through as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of like many things where it's like, oh, you know, there's definitely more that can be done. So
oh, yeah.
Apparently they see the potential in that. And our last story is about Shinzo Abe, the Prime Minister of Japan, visited the U.S., went to some different places. And when he saw President Barack Obama, Obama thanked him for many things, including anime.
And manga. Yeah. And did you catch the pronunciation that our president went into doing that? Karate, karaoke, manga, anime. He just dropped it and tried to sound as best as he could like a native Japanese speaker.
Yeah, that's always kind of awkward.
Awkward.
I always feel kind of odd when I've seen people at animazement and, you know, I thank them for like signing whatever. So like, arigato, thank you. Like, you know, I don't know. But yeah, that was kind of like a nice, kind of like a fun story this week. And I saw he went to some other places like University of Southern Cal. So
apparently he went on a road trip with Elon Musk in a Tesla Roadster.
Hmm.
So, oh, you know, yeah, I know. Yeah, apparently he just took a test drive with Elon Musk's driving shotgun. That's got to be pretty cool.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I guess it's good to be the leader of your party in the country.
Yeah. All right, and that has been our news. Let's get on to our episode impressions. We'll start with High School DxD Born, Episode 5, a Kano-centric episode. But when you think about these first five episodes of the series, in it kind of seems like we've come quite a ways ever since the end of New, where Koneko has completely come around to the opposite viewpoint of Issei, where she is opening up to him more, even resting on his lap in this episode. And then Akano, we had a nice episode with her in New, but this one felt more significant to her character because she was kind of talking about her backstory with her mother and her father, and not, you know, calling, not wanting to call him her, or not believing him to be her father because of what happened with Shuri, Akano's mom. But that was a really nice episode.
I enjoyed it, and it addressed one thing about her character that I wanted all along, was for her to actually finally to have a character. She's always felt like she was way too much in Ryasa's shadow, so much to the point where I thought, you know, what really is the point of you other than to fill out the rival, direct rival to Ryasa for Issei spot? Because, mm-hmm. you know, Asya fit into the little sister spot. You know, Koneko fit into the tsundere, the way too soon, not at all dare role.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the other girls just kind of fit as they went. As far as now, we'll go back to Koneko. As far as she's concerned, she's fully embraced her cat powers. So mm-hmm. she's probably fully embraced her cat attitude. And yeah. if anyone owns any cats, they know that they can probably not want to be anywhere near you for lengths at a time. And then all of a sudden they want nothing but your lap and your newspaper and your laptop or whatever. So, you know, she's being a cat, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Her development has been, I feel like it's been, maybe the anime is just doing it a little at a quicker pace or something. I feel like Highway may be better for answering this question, but I think of Kiba's development at the beginning of New, and I felt that the progression of it felt a little bit more natural in a sense than what we've seen this season with Koneko.
Koneko got very, very sudden, very, very just short, sharp shock, stop. Mm-hmm. Short, sharp shock, stop kind of development when you get right down to it. Kiba still continues to get a little bit more ink as far as, you know, writing is concerned for his stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it even seems like with him, they kind of tease the idea of the pairing of like him and Tsubaki, the vice president of the club.
Yeah, that gives Tsubaki just a little bit more character too, because she was like she was another one of those that was kind of in the shadow of her senior when you get right down to it.
Right. So in this season, we've seen so many new characters. It's interesting to watch them try and balance all of the amount of screen time that they get and the amount of focus that they get. It was nice that they. What they did for Akano after a pretty interesting battle against Loki.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about as a fantasy kitchen sink sort of way, or a fantasy smorgasbord, where you had angels and demons rubbing shoulders mm-hmm. with gods from Norse mythology, and you had some sort of, you know, some Chinese and Japanese gods in there, and then you had like the Chaos Brigade coming up in there, made of various legendary monsters and different stuff like that. It kind of reminds me a bit of Jim Butcher's series, The Dresden Files, where just, you know, every book brings up a new mythological point. And in some books later on in the series, they kind of like combine things together to where it's only natural that when the big battle comes in one of the novels, yes, Odin has come along and brought a couple of Valkyries, mm-hmm. you know, and they're fighting against vampires or whatever, and different stuff like that happens.
All right, so let's move on to our next episode, which is Dungeon Episode 5. Sky?
Still a really good show. It's kind of diminished a little bit of some of the things I felt that were kind of awkward, and that was some of the gaming stats as like real stats mm-hmm. that kind of like that didn't exactly lean on the fourth wall, didn't exactly break the fourth wall, but it just kind of leaned up against it a little bit too much at that point. But they've diminished that just a little bit, and they've started concentrating on characters, how they interact with each other. They've built up the background of the city just a little bit more. There's some weak spots in there to make it feel a little bit more complete. But genuinely, overall, I like it as a series. It's got some great characters to it. And that's ultimately, I think, what's going to carry the show more than anything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah, I would like to see that more development of the city and the actual dungeons. Because what Overcooled and I had talked about in the first episode was the concern of how harem-y it was going to get, and it's definitely gotten there. We've seen Ina in the most recent episode mm-hmm. have an attraction to him. Of course, there's Hestia and Lily. Also, there's the sort of the conflicted feelings of who she's been working with and working with Belle. And in this episode, we got much more of a Hestia focus, as there was Akano and Issei went on a date. Belle and Hestia had the run to the point where the date was already done. But, it left a nice moment there.
Everybody wants the Belle. At that point, everyone was just so utterly curious about him, which makes me think there's probably much more to his character than mere mortality. We're dealing with Greek gods, and he's got a mysterious grandfather.
Right.
Need we say more? There's something going on there. I mean, that's why he's able to excel with this one skill and then suddenly read a grimoire and develop magic and do different things like that.
Yeah, so let's talk about the grimoire a little bit. He develops the ability to use Firebolt, mm-hmm. and that definitely makes it easier on him. But the thing is, it was a book that he borrowed, and as he read it, all the text disappeared.
That's not too terribly surprising to me, because I come from a tabletop RPG background. Mm-hmm. Dungeons and Dragons fits right well into that. And whenever you read a scroll, it disappeared. Mm-hmm. It was a fire and forget. It was a one shot sort of thing. And there was even some esoterica in the backgrounds where, like, if you read a grimoire, it also all disappeared, and you were the only recipient of the spells in those books. So that didn't seem like too big of a stretch to me. And I like how they kind of handled it in that. Is this a bad thing or not? You know, we mm-hmm. read your book and it disappeared. Some schmuck just left it behind. What do I care anymore? Yeah,
just go ahead and read it. Just bring it back when you're done. Well, I brought it back, and now it's nothing.
it's a blank journal, you know?
Yeah.
It's your book now. Create your own.
Mm-hmm. All right, our next episode is Nisei Koi, Episode 4. When me and Smiley talked about Episode 2, I was saying that at some point I figure, it'll come back with, Chitoge's mom. What I didn't realize is that was going to be the next episode after we talked about it. I had forgotten in the manga just how quickly those events transpired from where Season 2 of Nisei Koi started.
Yeah.
And it's one of those moments in Nisei Koi that feels more, it feels a little bit more significant in how Raku is so dedicated to the cause of getting Hana and Chitoge together and kind of realizing how Hana really feels and the things that are kind of holding her back from seeing Chitoge, just this complete obsession of business. And a really funny moment when Raku just basically called her a moron and hit her, just like had to knock some sense into her, literally.
I think in the background of her character, I think at some given point in what she was doing, I think she kind of thought that, well, I excel at business, so therefore I excel at everything, so I'll excel at being a mother. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the guild fell off that lily for her, so to speak, and she realized that, wow, this is actually a really big full-time job, and I don't know if I'm good enough. Mm-hmm. I kind of got that indication from her, just a little bit. So it kind of made the character feel a little bit more smoother, because at the very beginning she was at the previous episode of this, she was a bit of an exaggeration when you get right down to it. You know, no one can time themselves with appointments down to the very second. That's just, come on.
Yeah, in a cartoon, she felt very cartoony.
Yes.
Which is always kind of awkward to say about an anime character.
Also, I think that kind of comes from a teenager viewpoint, especially perhaps a teenager in Japan. I mean, we often poke some jibes at, you know, where are the parents in this anime? Suspiciously absent, you know, parent syndrome and that sort of different thing. And this kind of reminds us why that exists in a lot of different ways. The primary reason is because the stories are about teenagers. Mm-hmm. And if you introduce an adult in there, they know how to solve problems. Teenagers don't. You don't have any drama.
Yeah.
Or you don't have any comedy. In this case, I think it was using that in a way to where it was, there's an old adage in the Japanese that the only thing you see of your father is the shape of his back as he's walking away from the house, because he's going off to work and he's going to stay there and he's going to earn that roof over the head, mm-hmm. and that food on the table sort of thing. So this was kind of a big exaggeration of that point, culminating, of course, and you have all this time for work, but you never have time for the important thing, and that's me. Mm-hmm. And kids just kind of having to understand that, yes, but you know, for me to spend quality time with you, I have to spend this other time over here doing this thing.
Yeah. It's just so ridiculous when they say, like, if I don't leave this, you know, town in, like, 20 minutes, I'm going to lose, like, a $1 billion deal on a yen. Like, yeah, that's kind of crazy. But of course, it did the typical Nisekoi things that we know and love it, hate it for, which is the misunderstanding of taking Chitoge to a 5-star hotel. how about you just say, we're going to see your mom.
No, you can't do that.
Very, very forced dialogue there to create misunderstanding. And then, of course, the scene of Chitoge and Hana finally embracing and just crying was really sweet. And great art by Shaft there in that scene.
Yeah, they're kind of shying away from that typical Shinbu crazy architecture, mm-hmm. weird character moments, and really concentrating on delivering good, solid quality character animation for this time around.
Right.
Not so much flash anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to think of one more thing. With Niseko, you mentioned the good and the bad. And, you know, once I kind of realized that it's pretty much just a showcase for fans to argue about who best girl is.
Yeah.
Once you realize that, you can kind of sit down and relax and enjoy the show a little bit more.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there was a fan popularity poll, and Onodera was number one. So, you know, Team Chitoge and Team Tsugumi and Team Onodera are coming out, and they're arguing, you know, their side.
But, you know, there's no Team Claude.
Yeah. with good reason. Good reason.
Well, there might be creep. There might be some shippers out there, you don't know.
Raku X Claude.
Yes. So let's hear it in comments, folks. Is there Raku X Claude shippers out there? Come on.
I hope that's not a doujin yet. because we just invented it, I believe. And then our last episode for impressions, we are talking about Sound Euphonium. I think I pronounced it right. Euphonium.
Euphonium. Yes, you pronounced that absolutely correctly. I feel kind of awkward at times, you know, going on at length to discuss the show simply because I cover it every single week, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be dedicated to covering it every single week until it comes to its conclusion. But this is Kyono Animation still in their wheelhouse and showing to you that they have multiple wheelhouses from which to operate. It doesn't have that same feel like a K-On! Does, where some of the outrageousness and exaggeration win the day over, nor does it have any kind of really eccentric style, like overly eccentric style characters like Chu Tu Koi and his fact as Rika and Sane, mm-hmm. and fake Mori Summer are concerned. It doesn't kind of have that dry sense of humor that Amaburi displayed. It's a different kind of story, and it's a good fit for this studio. It shows off a lot of what they know about how storytelling works, both visually and by allowing characters to simply be themselves.
I will admit that this, I haven't watched, I only watched this current episode that we're talking about, episode 4.
He cheated everyone.
Because it is one of those series that I actually decided I'm just not going to watch because I haven't been interested in KyoAni shows for quite a while. I'm actually kind of looking right now on Wikipedia to see when the first anime of Chu Tu Koi aired. That's the sequel series.
Chu Tu Koi was in the fall of 2012.
Okay. So that was the last series that I watched, and especially in the case of Chuchikoi, I felt like after season one that I felt satisfied.
Mm-hmm. I was one of those. I mean, I was happy that there was a second season, and it was I had fun with it. But I was one of those many people that went, really? Mm-hmm. You didn't say everything you needed to say about this, you know?
Yeah. What more hijinks can you do? But after that, I haven't really found interest in series, and even series around that time, Hyuka never really appealed to me. Free, I actually tried to watch a few episodes of Free and couldn't get into that. Amaburi, kind of the same thing. I think it's just something, I respect Kyoto Animation. Great group, great animation style. They do nice work, but there's something about those kind of series for me and what they've done for the past few years that it just doesn't appeal to me. But what I did like of what I saw in this episode is what you said about sort of the lack of the over-the-top nature of things that, one of the things that people kind of say about KyoAni is that they take the mundane and make it fascinating, whereas here, mm-hmm. it's mundane, but it's kind of interesting to follow along I don't have any context of the characters because I only saw this episode, but, mm-hmm. Watching them kind of train and get better and kind of, talk about their sensei that they were kind of like, man, he's really putting us through the woodwork. He's making us run and, mm-hmm. Do all these exercises and stuff. So I kind of liked it a little bit more for that grounded nature mm-hmm. of the series that we haven't seen or that I can't think of that I've seen in a KyoAni series in some time.
The basis behind what's happening in that episode is that it's pretty obvious that high school concert band isn't all that good.
Mm-hmm.
They're really bad, as a matter of fact. And the reason being is because they've never really applied themselves. And here comes a teacher that is willing to make them be good. And that's by establishing the fundamentals of what they're supposed to be doing. And so that's with the entirety of that episode. And it's really funny. We mentioned, especially for this particular episode, we mentioned how they keep a much more realistic style. This episode was one of the first ones where they kind of jam-packed some alternate facial animation that you see in that. And they kind of did that for a purpose because they were trying, I think, to show Kumiko kind of off balance in a way because there was that kind of scary background because mm-hmm. what's this person going to say to me? And then they kept on going into more cartoony style and they kept on bouncing back and forth in that just to show that the character was off balance. Mm-hmm. So that to me is a signature of, understanding how this medium works and how it works on a level that you can kind of get a feel for. And so they're able to tell a story on that level as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree with that. That sounds very interesting. Like that scene, she was apologizing to Kosaka. Is that the girl's name that she was apologizing to?
Yeah, yes.
When she was talking bad about Sensei.
Mm. Yeah.
And that face that she made with her eyes, and she kind of went to that as she walked away, kind of feeling like, she was kind of worried that, would she accept my apology or whatever.
And it's almost like a confession in that regard. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a little bit about Kyoto Animation and the differences and how people aren't exactly sometimes willing to try it out or look at it. A friend of mine from the Google Plus Anime Talk community, he got back from Japan just recently,
mm-hmm.
and he toured Tokyo, he toured Osaka, and he toured Kyoto. And he says he kind of got a neat feel, something I had kind of suspected in a way, but how Kyoto makes animation and how Tokyo makes animation, depending on the neighborhoods. Because saying in Kyoto, not everything was in walking distance, but everything could be in walking distance. You could see more stuff as you went around.
Mm-hmm.
And there was kind of everything was kind of sectioned off to where you could see more into the background of the city. You could see the countryside around them. You could see all those little sights that you see in their anime. They're trying to imitate that point of life and put it in there. But if you think of anime that comes from a Tokyo studio, it goes by very quick, unless they're making a big deal about, say, a beautiful background, it's not hardly there. It's always the subway. It's always the shop. It's always the train station. And mm-hmm. he was saying that's exactly what Tokyo is about. You're in Aiki Baroko, And then if you want to go to another fashionable district like Akihabara, you can't walk there. You go to a train.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a train, you have to go to a mega mall, which is disguised as a train station. And then you're whizzed along. And then you get off the train and you're in another mega mall disguised as a train station. And then you're out into another district, which is just like, hello, hey, hello, trying to get your attention. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, Kyoto Animation does original stuff, which kind of speaks for itself. Tokyo is doing all the adaptations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was an interesting thought. And then we were asking about, well, what about Gohan's located in Osaka? And he says, well, it kind of had that same kind of hipster vibe that you see from Gohan's and like K, the Missing Kings, and the K series, and SYD, Seikidamo Yosa. I'm going to mispronounce that.
Seitokai Yakuin Domo?
Yeah, the P and period joke anime. And, you know, kind of like that hipster weird color cred to it. He says the cities kind of shape the anime in that way.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Now let's get on to our discussion. We've seen a lot of anime movie news recently, not just in the terms of, you know, seeing like Wycross is getting an anime, not like that. But we're talking about Hollywood adaptations of manga, because when I saw Avengers, I saw trailers for Ant-Man, Fantastic Four, Batman vs. Superman. At some point, they're going to run out of comic books to adapt, right?
They will never run out of comic books.
I mean, there's so many variations of the same universes over and over. And Fantastic Four, it was like maybe 10 years or so that Fox movie or whoever made it with Jessica Alba and Chris Evans before he was Captain America.
No fair. He can't play two superheroes. Yes. Yeah. Chris Evans is pretty cool. He can play as many superheroes as he wants to.
Mm-hmm. But speaking specifically to the Japanese anime side of things, I feel like because we've been hearing a lot more news about Ghost in the Shell, and we had this story about Robotech, that it would be interesting to kind of take a look at anime movies. The ones that have come out that we've seen and the ones that we've always been hearing so much hubbub about. So I figure we could kind of break this off into two sections. First, talk about the things that we've seen adapted before, and some that are in very direct adaptation of a previous source material, or some that were heavily inspired by Japanese anime. And you see Speed Racer, you know, it's kind of difficult to take that movie seriously. I mean, John Goodman, I mean, he's a good actor. It's kind of cliche to say, but it's kind of like a fun movie. Dragon Ball Evolution, infamous for how mediocre and terrible it is and how completely different it is from, well, anything Dragon Ball, just about.
I've never seen that film, but I have seen the CinemaSins version of it, which is more than 25 minutes long.
And that, I guess that's one of their longer ones for like how messed up that movie is.
I think it had well over 300 sins. But then again, he's notorious for dinging things just for the sake of dinging things, you know. But I mean, Right. Still, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that was one I avoided too because I just knew it was going to be bad. And then Edge of Tomorrow, which used a different name than All You Need Is Kill, it was generally good, received good reviews. Box office wise, maybe didn't do as impressively as they thought it would with the idea of, you know, a Tom Cruise led movie. And then we have a couple examples here that are much more, you know, heavily inspired. You see The Matrix, and there's a great YouTube video showing comparisons to Ghost in the Shell, and you see a lot of scenes look remarkably similar. And then, of course, a lot of other things, too. And then Pacific Rim, which is big robots fighting, you know, kaiju. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of look at that and kind of see, like, wow, you know, Evangelion, you know, if done in this kind of sense, could kind of work.
I am a big fan that a story is shaped by the medium that it's in. And it's not that the twain shan't meet when you come to when you translate it over into different mediums. Mm-hmm. Lots of books and comic books, as we've seen, have been made into successful and not just, you know, really popular, but very well received films or mm-hmm. very well received television shows. But, you know, to me, there's a sense of purity in the storytelling that if, you know, the producers of the property had wanted to make a film, they would have bloody well made a film and not a television anime or a broadcast anime based on it. So, you know, there's lots of questions that involved about, you know, what exactly are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to say? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to cross-pollinize it over into other forms of fandom, I mean, there's been a debate every single time a doctor on Doctor Who that's the current doctor says he is going to retire. And before they make the announcement for the next actor, there's always this buzz about, is it time for the doctor to be a woman? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I'm unpopular and maybe anti-feminist in that, but it feels like you're sticking the doctor in the dress. It's like, if you want to tell a story with a strong woman character, what is it about Doctor Who that you like so much mm-hmm. that you feel you could tell with a female character? So to me, what is it about Ghost in the Shell that you think is so awesome that you can't tell your own story based on that? Why do you necessarily need the name? That's the question that answers itself. It's a name brand recognized property. And mm-hmm. that seems like the only reason they grab for that. You know, Ghost in the Shell deals about its militarization, its balkanization, its cyberpunk. It's a lot of different things. Are you honestly telling me that you can't find something out there that you could cook up and make your put your own wheel out there and not just spin someone else's around?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing about Hollywood is kind of maybe I could use video games as a better example because of the increasingly high amount of sequel content that's coming out. Is that there's a fear that a new IP can't really hold its own. Watch Dogs would be an example of a game that was sold as a new IP. Ultimately, it's like a Grand Theft Auto. It's just like a lot of open world games. And quite frankly, it just wasn't that good. Technically, it wasn't very sound. There's a lot of disappointment with that game. And so I think you can kind of say with movies is that they know there are audiences there for a Ghost in the Shell movie, so they pick at those properties.
Yeah.
And I want to just touch on the whole thing about medium is that mainly when people, you know, when you talk about the idea of, you know, if you wanted to make a movie, make a movie, it's, you know, writing for different mediums is very different. You know, you even see that with anime and manga or light novels. Like the guy that was the author of the Do Rubber Raw light novels did a manga in Shonen Jump. And so I was interested in that at the time, knowing the name recognition, but quite frankly, I can't even remember the name of the manga.
Did it work? Does a specific scene or two like kind of stick out in your brain?
It lasted 20 chapters, so there's not enough content there. Like they just ended it at 20, which I think really means like this actually is kind of garbage. We need to kind of just end this.
Yeah.
But not very good.
Oh,
good. Something like Symphony or something.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they've been, I mean, you know, we can mention Akira. They've been trying to, I think I've heard news of Hollywood trying to adapt that since the film came out in the States and it mm-hmm. did. And the thing about it is I saw Akira not first run in the theater, but I saw it in an art house repertory theater. And I saw it a couple times, actually, because I was so blown away by it. And even on some like off times, there was usually two or three dozen people in the theater coming to see it at that time during that first 2 weeks or so that there were the only 2 weeks they had it at that repertory theater. And they brought it back several times and it still did pretty good numbers. So I think at the time they wanted to say, hey, we could probably do something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned mediums. I mean, you know, with CGI, they're able to do so much other stuff that they're able to do right now. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. whereas special effects usually look really bad, really cheesy, or very much a product of their times. And even with CGI looking like a product of their times these days, too, they're able to do a whole lot more. So one of the questions I always want them to ask themselves is not just can we do this, but should we do this? Is it necessary mm-hmm. for us to do this?
Yeah, you mentioned the CG thing. I just thought of this, like watching Avengers Age of Ultron, is that when you see Japanese CG, it's not very good. And Ghost in the Shell is a series that's kind of popular for its use of CG, and I'd almost, in that sense, would rather see Hollywood handle that than Japan. So you mentioned Akira. Before I move on to our next part, I want to know, you watched Akira, you liked, I only watched it once and I didn't really think that much of it. Do you think that movie could hold up today?
I mentioned, like, you know, some of the things that Ghost in the Shell is about, and when you break down the parts of what the stories are trying to do, militarization, balkanization, increased technology, what it does to people, how people react to it. At the time, Akira was set kind of during the ideas that Tetsumo had for it were. There were times in Japan in the mid-80s to where there was a whole bunch of griping going on about interprefectural control and about, you know, outer prefectural influence and different things like that. There almost looked like a Warring States period again, which anime and other manga and different like that also touch upon in the modern day. But there's a lot of political volition going on. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember the party names, but there was a lot of they had difficulty getting majorities in their parliament, in their diet, and they had difficulty forming governments based on that. So there was a lot of political, what they called political bankruptcy at the time. Is that something that can still happen in the Japanese diet? Is that something that's happening right now in Congress when you get right down to it? You know, what does that do and how does that affect us? I mean, we still have things which divide us, to which something where an overarching plot of technology run out of control because no one's keeping an eye on it, that's still a viable storytelling. That's still great devices to tell stories. So it doesn't necessarily have to be Akira, or it can't be something Akira-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for a lot of these anime adaptations, like I believe Fosh and I talked about Ghost in the Shell, is that being more like something instead of being that thing is kind of works better, I think, in some cases. So let's get to some of these films that we kind of know about. We've talked plenty about Ghost in the Shell. Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow, of course, is going to be the lead character there. There's been talk of Death Note for many years. What's interesting, I'll share a link. There's a website called Ors where they show a lot of anime adaptations that have been talked about, and it's interesting to see when it was first announced and reconfirmed. Like, some of these have been going on for, you know, 5+ years, and Robotech is in there. Cobra the Space Pirate is on this list.
Sweet.
MARDOK Scramble, which, I mean, yeah, I didn't even like the first movie was okay, but the second one and the third one really just kind of veered off.
And no, you just ignore them then.
Yeah, kind of suckville. That was another one that was kind of like, you know, cyberpunkish. That was cool. And Star Blazers, you mentioned too. Let me see about the Star Blazers. It was announced in the mid-90s and reconfirmed in 2011. So there's a lot of movies here that they've talked about, but you know, it's going to be a long time before we see them come to fruition. Right now, Ghost in the Shell seems to have the most prospects to be done, whereas all these other ones, it's like, you know, don't hold your breath.
Yeah, and plus also you've got a machine in Hollywood, and each and every single part of that machine has to be satisfied and you get right down to it. Because, I mean, it's never going to come out that it's from one particular screenwriter or from one particular director's point of view. They're always going to have, in Hollywood, you're also always going to have very, especially for big tentpole kind of potential franchises, they spend a lot of money on. You're always going to have a lot of producer oversight on your directors. You're also going to have a lot of production oversight on your writers, because it's going to turn into plural before you know it, because they're going to have 4 and 5 people saying, this doesn't test well with audiences. This doesn't test well with audiences. And we got to change this around. You know, what if we don't make this character gay and we make him straight, or, you know, just as an example, they'll change that around. So it becomes kind of fractured before it even gets to, you know, making sets and doing all the practical things to make a film. So, yeah, that's something else to look out for.
I'm just bringing this question. I don't think I have a good answer for this, but if there were an anime series that you would like to see Hollywood take a stab at, what would it be?
You know, you have Death Note in your list, and I was thinking that would be something that works out really well it worked out great as a television series then, and surely they could add some, you know, additional flavor to it as they go along. Mm-hmm. But I think it would make a really good, there are definitely supernatural stories out there which kind of do well, or, you know, have the potential to do really good, but I think it would probably have the most potential to do really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you could, that's one where you could, you know, adapt it to somebody that's in the U.S. and their kind of thoughts on, you know, the people that rule the, our democracy in the U.S. And you can make a nice 2.5-hour movie and kind of cover a lot of the significant events in there, and, mm-hmm. you know, go through, spoilers, both L and Nier's, sides of the story.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And
you wouldn't have to be accused of whitewashing it or doing anything along those lines, because I think that sort of wish fulfillment is universal, and that they could probably build up that a little bit better for U.S. audiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in some sense, Death Note is a popular series, but I also think that idea of just having a book where you could write in somebody's name and they died, it kind of seems like popularized through like all the memes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking through all the series that I've watched, and I haven't seen anything that I feel really strongly about enough. I like Death Note because, you know, think about some of the series that we've talked about. They're very action-y. Akira is you know, action-y too in a way. Mm-hmm. Ghost in the Shell is Robotech and stuff. You know, it's a bunch of robots. Death Note is a very different series because it feels like I felt this way about the series Monster, is that that's something that could be read as a novel or seen as a TV mm-hmm. series, and it would appeal to everybody because of the dynamic characters in that series and how they're very interesting to explore and kind of, you know, look into their neuroses. This is one I just kind of came up with. I wish I had a better answer, but Death Note is very good. Any other closing thoughts on, you know, this whole thing of Hollywood movie adaptations?
No, I mean, I don't mean to come out and generally to basically say no, don't do this. Mm-hmm. They've always got to try to see what works when you get right down to it. That's how you grow and evolve things. And, you know, you mentioned video games. Even once upon a time, even Assassin's Creed wasn't a risk.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's just, that's how these things grow and develop and keep on building up one after another. So it's not exactly as if I'm saying, no, don't make these things, but just maybe question why you're making them more than just to make mm-hmm. a buck, because good stories sell themselves all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like, I kind of think this about the movie Avatar, where you see the money that was put on the screen, but story-wise, it's not really that strong. And no. I feel like if you put more effort into making the story better, in combining the very difficult process of being faithful to the source material while balancing it out for this unique audience that you're trying to sell it to and advertise it to make a pretty good movie.
And speaking of that fella, James Cameron, he for a long time was trying to be getting the old manga Battle Angel Alita into a thing. I don't know if it's going to be a live action film. I don't know if it'll be all CGI or mostly CGI or something like that. But he's been wanting to do that for quite some time, to which I say, you might want to leave that one alone. I like mm-hmm. it as I really, really like Battle Angel Alita as a manga. It's so you turn the pages so well with it.
And I also think I've mentioned the amount of superhero movies that there were just in the movie that I saw. Is that there's so many of them, and they're all interesting and cool and all that, but the more we see, I feel like at some point there's going to be a bit of fatigue, because it's going to be like, okay, we're going to get the next Captain America movie, and we have this plan in place almost like for 2022. At some point, you know, I feel like some people are just going to kind of go like, oh man, this is kind of wearing thin. And digging into the manga and anime bucket kind of gives like a, you know, a potential for like a different perspective on or a different story viewpoint that we just don't see with comic book adaptations, because well, good, at some point I feel like they'll reach a point of I think they're already formulaic, but you know.
Yeah, you know, Age of Ultron, it kind of like it was mostly a movie, but you cannot forget the glowing parts to where it was also serving as an advertisement for Thor Ragnarok, for Captain America Civil War, mm-hmm. and for the two Infinity Gauntlet movies that are coming up. And I was like, wow, really? Did you have to do that? Mm-hmm. And isn't the name selling itself by this point? So, yeah.
All right. And that has been our fifth episode of the spring season. Sky, thank you for joining me. What are you covering on Metanorn this season?
As I've mentioned, I am covering Hibike Euphonium. I am also covering Plastic Memory. And I'm also going to be doing the disappearance of Nagato Yuki-chan.
Oh, very good. All right. And I teased the New Blood podcast. Unfortunately, plans did not work out for that. Things got a little busy, especially for myself, during this past weekend. So I'm hoping that next weekend I can get all three of those people together to record the New Blood special. So hopefully that'll come out then.
Indeed.
No promises. All right, so thank you for listening. For Skyline, I'm J-Ro. We will see you next time on Metaverse. Joe!